I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. If you listen to this program from time to time, then you know that on Fridays we have our barbershop segment where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Well, there was a lot going on in the news and in the world, and we thought, you know, it was time for the women to check in. So we're having a special beauty shop. Joining us this week to weigh in on some recent items in the news, well, we just thought we needed a woman's touch. I'll just put it that way. Amy Alexander, journalist and author. Also with us, Mary Kate Carey. She's a former presidential speechwriter, columnist, and blogger at U.S. News and World Report. And at St. Louis member station KWMU is commentator and blogger Pamela Merritt. She blogs at Angry Black Bee. I can't say it, but it rhymes with... You can figure it out. Ladies, thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Now, this may not be the most momentous issue of the week, but it's timely, so I thought we'd ask you about this. The Salahi saga continues. Not that there were any further crashes of White House events, but Mrs. Salahi, they of the famous, you know, White House crash that caused such a big stir, is starring with a few other ladies in the Bravo show, The Real Housewives of D.C. The show premieres tomorrow night. And I thought, we'll play a short clip. Here it is.
Every Thursday by Bravo, the housewives are taking over the Capitol.
Hello, Washington, D.C.
Get to know the ladies on the Hill.
This town is small. Everybody has an agenda.
Life in D.C.
Now, you know it's going to be a bummer when people start calling it this town. Anytime I hear this town, I know I'm going to be irritated. But so Mary, because this is not a town, excuse me, major metropolitan area, hello. But Mary Kay, you're going to be tuning in?
Oh, I don't think so. And I certainly don't want my daughters tuning in. I just think it is demeaning. And the one way that somebody put it, that Hank Stover in the Washington Post, said there's nothing true in the title of this show, except for the words "the" and "of."
Okay.
Oh, that's rich.
And you know, they're not real housewives, and they're not necessarily even from D.C. A lot of them are from the suburbs and, you know, live out in the country or whatever. I think a lot of it's staged. I think if they were really real, they'd be doing what the rest of us real housewives in D.C. do, which is drive and go to volunteer
themselves.
Meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Or wait on subway platforms.
Right, right.
Yeah. You know, and also, Amy, what about the fact that, you know, Washington, D.C. Is more than 54% African American. There's one so-called black, there's only one housewife, so-called housewife.
Right,
to
not
Mary
really
Kate's
a housewife.
Point,
right.
Who's a Harvard MBA.
Yeah.
So, I'm kind of, on the one hand, it's like, we be irritated that there aren't more African Americans or people of color in it, or should we be greatly relieved?
Yeah, but it's sort of, you know, there's the, among the panoply of outrages around this whole franchise, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole, if you think of the whole array of these Real Housewives shows, is that really the worst sin? I mean, so on a scale.
And Atlanta, of course, is predominantly African-American. There's one white participant.
And that's the one.
Was.
Yeah, in terms of the sort of potential for racial upset. I was more upset by the Real Housewives of Atlanta. The whole sort of just fighting and, you know, this whole portrayal of women as being unable to get along, I find really offensive. But the Real Housewives of D.C., you know, I probably will allow myself to peek at it. You know, I always fall into this trap of being, above it all and being high-minded. And then, like, the Real Housewives of New Jersey a few weeks ago had a marathon. And I was, like, cleaning or something, and I had it on, and I watched. And the next thing you know, I had watched, like, three of them back to back.
Because what do you like about it?
It's just like a train wreck. It's either, what's
it
the
is
best
a train
analogy?
Wreck.
It's
That's
either
a word.
Train wreck, or it's like, just like you've like eating potato chips or something,
right.
And you know you should stop, but it's just so
don't want to look, but can't look
away.
Yeah.
Pam,
yeah.
What about you?
I don't know. But yeah, I don't think it's like eating potato chips because I love potato chips, and even though I know they're not good for me, it's worth it. When I watched, one episode, I think it was a Real Housewives of New York or Jersey, I can't remember. And it was so off-putting and so unrealistic, and it was weird to not identify with anything on the screen. And they were annoying, and I kept thinking to myself, I got 15 minutes in, and I'm like, oh, I might as well just watch the whole thing, but I don't like these people. And So I don't know if
which
know,
is why you watch the whole thing.
of course, and that's an hour I'm not getting back in this
right,
life. So,
right.
that's
but what do you think the appeal is? I mean, do you think that there's kind of? I mean, I take your point, Amy. You don't want to be so high minded mm-hmm. about it. That which is why we're talking about it right for all these mm-hmm.
right,
minutes.
Right.
But what do you think it's the appeal? Because my guess is that men aren't watching this.
No.
My guess is that other women are watching this.
I think so. It's popular among some gay men, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. because the theatricality in and of itself is kind of stunning. I mean, and I personally find it fascinating, you know, trying to figure out now, are they like just really laying it on because they know they're, you know, they're on a television program, or are they really like this? Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, is this purely a theatrical affectation, the way that they plot and scheme all the time and, you know, and blow up these really trivial occurrences in their lives? Or is this really how, you know what
you
I mean?
You know, the other part that I find weird is that, like, with having children, and many of these women do have children on mm-hmm. the program and trying to work and so forth, I'm lucky if I can see my women friends, like, once a month.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
to spend all that time beefing is, to me,
right.
you know, I
or
wish I did
matter,
have time to have a fight with my girlfriends.
Who right? has time to crash the White House? I mean,
yeah, there's that.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's
exactly.
another whole project.
Speaking of crash and train wrecks, Amy, we wanted to continue the discussion about the NAACP and Shirley Sherrod. We don't have time to go into the whole backstory on that, but I think many people get the particulars of the story. You wrote a very provocative blog post in which you raised the question, and others have also, about you talked about the tire marks on your back put there by the NAACP head, Benjamin Jealous, but you make the point that others have also too about whether there's a double standard for the way women are treated. And the issue here is not just that a lot of people rushed to judge Shirley Sherrod, the USDA rushed to judge, but the NAACP issued a very stinging statement that agreeing with the decision to force her out without even investigating the context of an event, of their own event. And you raise the question of whether this would have happened if this were a man. I mean, why do you say that?
Right. Well, I probably did not link more closely. I think there are two things that came into play. And one is this sort of overriding paternalism that is just laid over just about everything at that association. And I think historically that's just been the way it is. Merle Evers was president and CEO for a period. But historically, I think women have been kind of the support system within the association. And from time to time, they have been sort of clearly, you know, expendable and kind of just cast aside or exploited in various capacities.
Well, the current chairman of the board is a woman, a young woman.
And she was installed early this year. She was on the board when I was working there last summer, but she was not the chairperson. And, you know, I actually, as I wrote in the column, I have kind of high hopes for Rosalind Brock's tenure there, but she has a lot of work to do to kind of cut through some of this static paternalism is the best way to put it. But the other thing that I think happened in terms of Mrs. Sherrod being denounced so hastily is that there really is not a real appreciation for journalism beyond its ability to kind of bring an element of showbiz to whatever the association is doing.
Well, that made me question whether is the issue gender or generation? Generation. In that the younger generation, very eager to make a break with the perceived staidness mm-hmm. of the past and thus not doing the due diligence that an earlier generation was taught to do. Because
right.
in part,
mm-hmm.
the reason the NAACP exists is that there was a rush to judge African Americans with dire consequences. Mm-hmm. And so that's mm-hmm. one of the reasons I was wondering. And Pam, I want to hear from you on this, but Amy, if you just...
Yeah, I think, in the way that it sort of came together... There simply was no mechanism there. There was no one to say, well, let's call Georgia or let's send an email down mm-hmm. there or let's get someone from mm-hmm. the Georgia branch on the line before we send this release. And I won't go into the weeds in terms of, you know, exactly what happened the night because I kind of have, since I posted that, learned exactly how it happened. But it's kind of beside the point because the takeaway is that there was no fail-safe there and there was no real appreciation of the due diligence, even in the heat of the moment. You know, I understand that given the fractured media landscape, it's very important to be able to stay ahead of the curve. You've got to control your narrative. Mm-hmm. But it can't be, it's just these sort of sketchy kind of, you know, reactionary.
Mary Kate, you wrote about this too, but Pam, I want to bring you into this. What do you think? Do you think this is what do you think the failure was? Was it gender? Was it what was driving the failure with the NAACP? Was it gender? You think it was generational?
Right.
Amy says a lack of journalistic values or really understanding that.
All of that. I mean, it was. I think it was gender because, as Amy pointed out, there's that history, and I think that they carry that history. You know, most of the people I know who are members of the NAACP have been members for quite some time, so there's a legacy. And then I love that you brought up the generational thing because, you know, it was in Kansas City this year, and I'm a St. Louis native, so I got an invitation as a blogger to attend, and I had a conflict, so I wasn't able to make it to the actual convention this year. But it was interesting. I'd never had, you know, just in the last 12 months, I've had the NAACP reach out to me and start sending me press releases. And I think it was generationalism plays a role in this. But it's also when you're entering into the phase of trying to incorporate new media into your work, there's that give, that period of time where you're trying to learn how it works and you're using it. And I think what happened is you had people who were trying to learn how it works, who were using it and didn't quite understand what they were diving into, because I would have definitely questioned the source. You know, as a blogger, it's disturbing to me because we're all being lumped into the same category. And I'm thinking, yeah, this source had already been denounced within the blogging world as having manufactured news. And just a Google search would have outed that.
Sure. If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. We're having a special visit to the beauty shop. We're talking with writer Amy Alexander, editor and blogger for U.S. News and World Report, Mary Kate Carey, columnist, rather, I should say, and blogger Pamela Merritt. Mary Kate, you blogged about this. You said that there was a point that was missed here also from your perspective. I want to play a clip now from Shirley Sherrod's speech to the NAACP Freedom Fund banquet on March 27th of this year. Here it is.
My father wasn't the first black person to be killed. He was a leader in the community. He wasn't the first one to be killed by white men in the county. But I couldn't just let his death go without doing something in answer to what happened.
Amen.
I made the commitment on the night of my father's death at the age of 17 that I would not leave the South, that I would stay in the South and devote my life to working for change.
Needless to say, this was not part of the edited passage that was posted on Andrew Breitbart's website. Tell me why. It's a very moving passage, by the way. Why did this strike you?
Well, you know, it was just sort of the speechwriter in me when the story first broke and her response was that it was taken out of context. I thought, well, why don't we take a look at the speech? And there's a great website called AmericanRhetoric.com. And so I went to there, and sure enough, there's the speech fully transcribed. And I read it, and the part that got taken out of context was actually not the most interesting part of the speech. The clip that you just played is riveting. She's growing up and swears she's going to get herself out of the South and go to college up north and marry somebody from the North and never come back. Her father gets killed by the Klan. She swears that night, you know, I got to stay and fix this. She ends up going to college in the South. Before she leaves for college that fall, you know, leaves to go locally, the Klan comes back to her house. Her mother has a newborn. There's a big spread in ages of the kids. And her mother goes out to the front porch and faces down the Klan and says to these guys, I can see your faces and I know exactly who you are and I'm never going to forget it. And her mother goes on to get elected to the school board and I believe still serves on the school board 30-some-odd years later. Shirley Sherrod gets out of college, goes to the agriculture department, stays, again, you know, 20 or 30 years, however long she's been there. And it's this very compelling narrative of these two strong women who are not bowed by the Klan and who stay and fight for change. Mm-hmm. And, my blog was, here's the most compelling part of the speech, and don't we all owe it to her to read what she had to say and not jump on this bandwagon of, you know, craziness from this one clip that got taken out of it. And
Thank
it's a fascinating story.
It is a fascinating story, which we, I think, and hopefully, Amy, this is that could be your next book. Not that, you know. There you go. But speaking of
that, it was a missed opportunity.
A couple of minutes left, though. I've got to ask you about this flap over Essence magazine. It's hired its first Caucasian fashion editor, and some folks are highly upset about this. Her name is Eliana Plakas. She came from O, the Oprah magazine and U.S. Weekly. This is Michaela Angela Davis is the former executive director of fashion and beauty at Essence, and she had this to say at CNN.
Essence is the one magazine that puts race in their brand. They say this is the place for African American women, the place where black women come first. But I'm saying this also for literally the black girls that called me crying, that had this is the one place. There are plenty of qualified black female fashion professionals. What does this say to them? What does this say to the industry at large?
Pam, I'm going to ask you this because you're the angry black B. Are you angry about this?
I'm angry about it. I'm stunned, honestly, because of the last part of what Michaela said, which is there are so many qualified women of color who come to mind that you're just surprised that a magazine that is known for not shying away from being the magazine for black women would take that move. But it reminds me of the same kind of controversies you see when you have a straight editor of a gay publication or, you know, here in St. Louis, the editor of the St. Louis American is not black. So
it
gives you pause.
It does. Interesting. Very briefly, Emmy, are you angry or not?
No, I'm not angry. If she can do the job, then what's the issue?
All right. Post-racial this. That's your second blog post. Okay. I'm giving Amy all kinds of assignments. Okay. Here with us, that's all the time we have in the beauty shop. With me in the Washington, D.C. studio, the ever in fashion Mary Kate Carey and Amy Alexander, and holding down the fort in St. Louis, commentator and blogger Pamela Merritt of Angry Black B. You fill in the rest. And she joined us from member station KWMU. Ladies, thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.